Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Victoria Gaither, television journalist and host of the show. This show is really special on many fronts tonight. Entertainment co-host Michael Kay is also joining me. Michael, as many of you may know, or if you don't, had a loss in August. His husband, Steve, died. So, and a few days ago, well, more than a few days ago, my dog, Abby, of 16 years, passed away. So that was quite devastating for me. So if you're a pet owner, I'm sure you guys understand that. But Michael had sort of threw the idea about grieving during the holidays. So I said, well, I don't know, Michael. I don't think I'm ready for it yet because I'm still kind of emotional over Abby. And he said that he talked to our very good friend Debbie Tibbles, who has been on At Home with Victoria before and who has also lost a child. So then the Connecticut shooting occurred. So, of course, we thought, you know, now would be a really good time to do the show. And, Michael, it is amazing how fate has things and how the world has things, because we were having that discussion. And then within a span, I guess, of I would say about 4 days, all of this just sort of happened.
Yeah, no, it was kind of fueled by wanting to do a show like this was kind of fueled by my Thanksgiving, actually. You know, Mom died in June, and then Steve died in August, so I feel like I had a couple whammies this year and stuff, and kind of coming up with what to do. And I was talking with Debbie, who has, of course, her book, Ollie Tibbles, The Boy Who Became a Train, is available now on Amazon.com/Debbie Tibbles, DebiTibbles. And we were just talking about tips that she had for getting through the first year when Ollie had passed and everything. And when the Connecticut shootings happened, I thought, wow, you know, whatever I'm feeling right now, these people up in Connecticut with their children so viciously, brutally murdered at gunpoint, mm-hmm. seemed to be just the overriding stand. So if we can help a couple people tonight come up with different ways to go ahead and deal with their grief, we're going to be actually taking call-ins a little bit later. Feel free to call in at 718-664-9364. That's 718-664-9364. Mars, our ever...
Michael, I just wanted to mention, I'm just sorry for those of you, you know, just because I'm such a newsy person, just wanted to make sure that people have the latest information before we bring the fabulous Debbie Tibbles on to talk about grieving and her giving us advice that there were 20 children who were gunned down and 6 adults that were killed at that Newtown school massacre. And according to the press, that is the second largest massacre in the U.S., Virginia Tech. Of course, being the first one. And as we go throughout the show, I thought it was fitting that, you know, we in our own way kind of pay tribute to reading some of the names of the children and also the adults who passed away. And we're going to play a little bit of music in between as we talk to Debbie to try, you know, in our own way to, you know, keep the mood a little bit light, because, you know, this topic and this conversation is very, very heavy. And I have to say to all of my colleagues in the press, there have been moments when I've covered stories, Michael, back in the day when I would run to the bathroom or run inside, you know, the car while I was waiting to do a live shot. That's something that disturbed me so much that I would start crying because I needed to get it out. And then you fix yourself up and you go back on camera. But I noticed, and I think it's a good thing, and maybe Debbie can talk about this, that I'm seeing a lot of news reporters, I'm seeing news anchors, I'm seeing commentators, literally on television having a very difficult time getting their emotions in check and getting themselves together, even the President of the United States, you know, shedding a tear. So I kind of know for me that crying is actually one of the ways that really helps me get through grief. So with that said, Debbie Tibbles, we are so happy to have you here for this conversation.
Well, thank you, Victoria and Michael, first of all, for having me on the show. And sailing on the wings of both of you, I think I first want to say thank you for recognizing this that this needed to be shared, and for all of us to come together and share together our feelings. And I love that you share that, you know, people in the media, yourself, when you've, you know, had to go out there and report these very disturbing and deeply tragic events, that we're all human at the end of the day, and that, you know, because often that's not always portrayed in the media, and I really applaud that you honor that and share with everybody that, you know, we are all human at the end of the day, and the most important thing is that we do get our feelings out there, you know, and that it's okay to shed a tear in public or show emotion and show that we care. And, you know, these events have been I was just so shocked. I was without words when I saw what had taken place. And kind of going back to what Michael had said earlier, and bless you, Michael. I mean, I'm so sorry for your for the losses that you've endured this year, and right. that you have the humanity to understand or at least look at something like this and say, wow, you know, my pain could never be, you know, I'm, you know, we had this conversation recently where we shared about this, and, you know, and I feel grateful almost for the fact that, you know, I lost my son Ollie, and I feel grateful that he was with me when he died. You know, he was safe in my arms, and these parents did not have that opportunity, and also the parents of the adult, you know, because children are always our children, even when they become adults. And for them to have suffered at the hands of this maniacal kind of event is just incomprehensible. And everybody is reaching and grasping for answers, and I'm not sure there are any. I think the most important thing that I have found for myself over the years is that the most important thing is to share and to talk and to not be concerned about what people think when you feel the need to share something, whether it's anger, whether it's pity, whether it's just the fact that you are extraordinarily in pain and that you need to share it. I just think that's the most fundamental thing that we can do. You know, I mean, I know that Michael and I shared a conversation earlier talking about grief and our loss, and that I had said to him, you know, how in the first year, because people come around and they want to offer advice and you welcome it, but there are times when you kind of want to shut yourself away and you just need to be by yourself to kind of embrace the feelings that are happening. But at the same time, you equally want to have someone with you and you need to have that human contact to kind of release that pain. And I know for myself in that first year, I could not have the Christmas that we had always had. This will be Christmas number 8 without Ollie. He was 7 years old when he died. And there are times when it feels like yesterday, and there are times when it feels like 8 years. You never know what's going to happen, and you kind of have to find your way. And everyone has their own way, and there's no right or wrong. It's just learning from everybody what they have found works for them. And I know for myself, I kind of had a joke with Michael, and I said, you know, I took myself off to Las Vegas for the first year because I did not want a Christmas that was the Christmases we had always had. It was unbearable to me to have to go through it. And so I took myself to Las Vegas because I knew it wouldn't feel like Christmas. And it worked. Mm-hmm. It worked for me for that first year. And I think everyone is different. We all have our own ways of dealing with things, and you know, and every year is different. And the most important thing, I think, is to share and to talk and to know that you're not alone. People do care, even though sometimes you kind of want to push them away because that's what pain does to you. But I've
Debbie,
been
let me just,
very lucky.
Let me just interrupt you just for a quick second, because I know you and Michael, you know, had many conversations off air about this. And Michael, I wanted to ask you, because this is the first holiday season for you, and again, you talked about it kind of hitting you during Thanksgiving. Is it more difficult, and Debbie, you can answer this second after Michael, is it more difficult for you, do you think, because it is the holidays and it's Thanksgiving and it's Christmas?
Oh, it's no doubt it magnifies it. It magnifies it for so many things, just like Deb was talking about. It's the basically the traditions, the ways that you did do Christmas in the past and stuff like that. I give her applause for going to Las Vegas, which is kind of really what I'm thinking to do. See, Christmas as I know it now will not be the same. So to try and mock or mimic or imitate what was, to me seems almost laughable, because I don't know if Debbie can agree with this, but there's a certain sense of, I'm sure everybody can, there's a certain sense of, and I hate to use the term, can't deal with the bullshit. It's that when I'm looking at the, you know, when I'm looking at these commercials and they're gathering around the Maxwell house and oh he comes home early and ooh wakes up mom, oh you know, dirty little, you know, I just want to put a bullet in it. I hate to use that term on this show, but it really does frustrate me to no end. So, of course, I stick with reruns of Roseanne and Will and Grace. Those are things that can't irritate me right now.
Well, you know, there's a story which I shared in my book, actually, but I had a reminder of it last week where I took myself off to the grocery store to do some shopping. And I recall this happening the first Christmas Ollie had gone, because things like shopping still need to be done. And shopping when you're grieving is a pain in the ass because you have to, number one, put makeup on and make yourself look presentable. And when you're grieving, you don't always want to look, you're just not like that. I mean, well, I don't know about anybody else, but I was just in my pajamas and my dressing gown for the longest time. And you just lose interest in yourself and in life. But still, milk needs to go in the fridge and the kids still need to be fed. So off I go to the shops and I get there and the Good Samaritans are outside the shops ringing those bells. And I truly wanted to take those bells and hit them over the bloody head because I just was not interested in listening to the damn songs, you know. And so today, the other day, I took myself off to the store and lo and behold, the Good Samaritans are outside the store. And I have to say, I kind of had a bit of a chuckle because I just brought myself back 8 years ago to that time. And I felt sorry for the chap who was ringing that bell because I just gave him daggers. And so I put myself a little dollar in there and I smiled to the gentleman, you know, and just giggled as I walked into the store. And I have to say it was a good feeling.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting, Deb, that you say that because I did a little research on different sites, and most of them are sites that are sanctioned by the American Pediatric Association and also a few other well-known organizations. But they kind of give you 10 tips to recovery when dealing with any type of grief. And one that you two have just talked about was the first one they say is to learn to let go of things that remind you of that person or that situation.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what you did for Christmas when you took yourself to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
And it absolutely, you cannot, and it's so poignant, and I can't even think of another word because even poignant doesn't really cut it. The fact that you can no longer have Christmas again because Christmas and the holidays, Thanksgiving, birthdays, anniversaries, but in particular the holiday season, because everyone is so jolly and you're so not. And it's very hard to try and stay jolly and see the miracle of what Christmas is about and embrace the spirit of Christmas when you feel that the spirit has left you. And so there comes a time, and I know it's different for everybody, there comes a time where the spirit, I do believe, eventually finds you. And it doesn't necessarily happen at Christmas either. It didn't happen for me at Christmas. The spirit found me later. And I was able to start enjoying the holidays again. But I have to tell you, in all honesty, even after 8 years, it's still a struggle on some days. And it could be something as simple as walking into the store and just going through my day and hearing the Christmas songs, which I've kind of learned to ignore. But it could be something as simple as a child that is the same age as Ollie, and perhaps he's wearing a pair of sandals or something that are identical, or I'll hear the words "all aboard" or something, or you know, that just triggers. There's a trigger, and I'm sure Michael can relate to this. But there's a trigger in something, someone saying something, an action, even an act of kindness that totally gets you off guard, and then all of a sudden you're a basket case in the middle of Dominic's, and that's how it goes, you know.
Michael.
And you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That happened to me. This would be Monday, so it happened to me on Thursday evening. After five days of not showering, not getting off the sofa, and of course Victoria got me this iPad, which I got, you know, totally obsessed with. I unplugged the phone, went off Facebook, and I didn't want to deal with anything. So I thought I was really doing good by Thursday. Got up, showered, shaved. Ooh, I was looking so great. Put some nice fancy smell-em on, went to the steakhouse, which is right down the street from me, and I'm sitting there and I ordered, pork chops and a mashed potato, some green beans and stuff, and I pretended, because it's a big sports bar, the hockey game was on, the Vancouver Canucks and the Boston Bruins, and I thought, oh, well, I'll watch these nuts swim around for a while and everything. And then Carrie Underwood's song, Before He Cheats, comes on the jukebox. I, at this point, turned into this quivering mash. It is everything I can do to get the check, package up the meal,
hold
it together before I even leave the restaurant, because I am so, it's almost like, when you have really bad diarrhea, it's that race to the finish line, where you just have, I've got to disappear again. So
I certainly
understand that fully.
Well, you guys know, and certainly I don't like to, I don't have children, so people that know me know Abby was really my kid. But it was interesting because the first couple of days after she passed, I always would find myself just getting up and going down to her room at a certain time to open the door, to let her out, to pet her, to go play ball with her. And I never realized how all of these things are just so programmed sort of in your mind and in your body that you just go do it. And then I would go down and say, oh, okay, no, but she's not there. So that really took me by surprise that I instinctively, had a routine. I didn't really know that I had a routine, but obviously I did, because I kept doing things that I always did. And then I would have to catch myself and say, oh, no, actually, Vic, no, she's not there. You don't have to take her out. So that part of my grieving was a little bit surprised to me. And in fact, I even called Michael on the phone and said, did you go through that when Steve passed away? Like you always did certain things. You really didn't pay much attention to it. And now that the person is gone, you're still finding that you still your body and your mind still wants to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It does, and it's funny you say that, because that, it's how, as human beings, we, as much as we love the people and our pets and our jobs and our life while we're here, it still amazes me how we take everything for granted. I mean, what you've just described made me think of the time when, I lost my son, yet I failed to realize that my other son lost a sibling. And I remember the day after Ollie had passed, I remember coming down the stairs and, coming down the stairs, and at that time in the house, as you come down the stairs, immediately to your right was the family room where the kids would always play. And in the morning, my boys, which I miss saying now, always, because it was always my boys. So my boys would always be sitting in the family room together, side by side, with a train set up usually. The cat would be there, and they'd be watching SpongeBob SquarePants. And I remember coming downstairs and looking to my right to the family room, and George was on his own. Sitting on his own. It was so profound to me that I didn't even think about the fact that I wouldn't have the two of them. I know that sounds kind of silly when I say it, but I was so used to seeing two there, and George was just so alone in this big room, looking at the television screen. And then one day I set the table up and I forgot, and I set the table for five, so I totally understand what you're saying, Victoria, and I think it goes back to all of us, we have these wonderful people and pets and things in our lives, and we just always think they're always going to be there, and then when they're not. You know what I mean? And it's just so now one of the wonderful things that has transpired, that has come out of my loss, is the relationship that I have with my other two children and some pretty amazing things that have happened. And so, you know,
I think Michael wants to play a song, and let's hear if you can remember some of those amazing things that happened, because Michael also, Deb's got a book that she wants to talk about and how we can find it on Amazon. And then we want to actually, Michael and I, say the names of some of the, not some of, the names of the children and the adults who passed away as a result of that shooting. Michael?
Yeah. This first song, written by Rose Fagan, will go out to Charlotte Bacon, age 6, Daniel Barton, age 7, Olivia Engel, age 6, Josephine Gay, age 7, Anna M. Marquise Green, age 6, Dylan Hockley, age 6. You know what? It's hard to read these, man. Madeline F.
I know.
Age 6, Catherine V. Hubbard. Yeah, let's take a break of Catherine V. Hubbard. This is Rose Fagan with God Cry. Don't go way back. More with Debbie Tibbles when we get back.
Oh.
When I let her burn to the ground and brothers killed each other, God cried. When London skies were raining bombs and people ran for cover, God cried. When Pearl Harbor saw the wings of war and on Normandy soldiers washed ashore,
God Cried, written by Roy Holdren and Rose Bae. And I think it was very, very fitting. It's a great, I hope we're all misty-eyed after that one. It's beautiful lyrics, especially dealing with, I know, we had a God.
My gosh.
We're supposed to be real here.
You know, Debbie and Michael, what I think it was, and I think it was, and everyone inside the chat room is talking about this, and this is the exact same thing that happened to many reporters who were reporting on the story. When you began, Michael, to recite the names and the ages of those precious babies, you know, you can't help, because it puts a face and it's a person. You know, they're not this sort of abstract person that people can't touch and feel. When you're able to see the pictures and you're able to hear the stories on the news about, you know, the young kid who was buried today, who loved, you know, one of the players who played with the New York Giants, I think, who was buried in that player's number uniform. I mean, that really gives you a sense that, you know, these were real kids, you know, just like your average kid in every single neighborhood across America, Great Britain, wherever else you live, that were 6 and 7 year old kids that do what 6 and 7 year old kids do. I mean, you know, that just, it just kills you.
Well, plus my niece is this age now, Kate, and Ollie was 7 when he passed.
Yeah.
Debbie, let me ask you a very stupid question, because it's something to me that I find is laughable, and I get why people say it and stuff, and of course they always say time heals all wounds, and let me ask you. I know Ollie had a room where he was well taken care of by you and everything. How long did it take you to change his room into something other than his room after Ollie's death?
Okay. Well, first of all, the room was always the boys' room, and it actually said that, the boys' room. And so there were 2 beds, 2 boys, and George took care of his younger brother. They were only 18 months apart, so they were very close. And so when he passed, first of all, I had an amazing experience, if I may share, with what happened one night was that just a few days after Ollie had gone, I heard train noises, like a toy train, coming from the bedroom. So I went into the bedroom, and George was laying in bed, and I came in expecting to see him on the floor playing with trains, but he was lying in bed. And I went over, but he was kind of giggling. So I went over to George, and I said, "Hey, Georgie," I said, "you've been playing with trains?" And he said, "No, Mummy." And I said, "Well, I can hear a train. I can hear a train noise." And he said, "No, I'm not playing with trains." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Well, it's time for you to go to sleep. You have school in the morning." And he goes, "I was playing with Ollie." So immediately caught my breath, and I said, "Okay." And the hair stood up on the back of my neck, you know, and I said, "You were playing with Ollie?" And he looked at me and he said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay, is he still here?" And I kind of said it very tentatively.
Right.
And he said, "Yeah," like it was nothing, you know. And I said, "Oh," and kind of ridiculously looking around the room and, you know, and I said, "Where is he?" And he said, "He's on the ceiling." I said, "Okay." And I really, quite honestly, at that point, really didn't know what else to do or how to act or anything. I just know that it was just a great feeling. And I think more than anything, I was glad that my son George was actually quite happy. And so I said, "Well, it's time for you to go to sleep. And, you know, and you've got to get to school in the morning." And that was that. And I remember that I looked around the room, and there was no toy on the floor at all. All the toys were in the closet. So, you know, you can make of that what you will. I just know that that was just a wonderful moment, and in fact helped a great deal in having to kind of take down the bed, which was extraordinarily painful to have to take off the duvet. I know you can relate to this, Michael. Take off the sheets, take off the duvet, put it in a sack, and then to dismantle the bed and take it out of the room and put it in the garage was awful. I couldn't do it. In answer to the original question, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was maybe about 6 months. Like, I just couldn't do it. I didn't want my boys to end, but I knew that I had to, and I knew that I had to for George, and I knew that I had to for myself. And it was not because somebody said, you need to do this. I'm a great believer in when you're dealing with grief and loss, you really want to do things when you are ready to, not when someone tells you, not when you
right.
think that you need. It has to be when you're ready to do it, whether it's
and you know,
months,
Debbie, that,
you know?
That right mm-hmm. there, when I talked about, about the website that I got the information from on the 10 ways to handle grief, and Mara and myself have been putting that website, posting it inside a chat room. Exactly what you just said is one of the 10 ways to handle it, that there is no time limit. You know, you handle it and you're on time, whether it's a month or whether it's 2 years, it's whenever it's in your time, not someone else's time.
Right.
Your time. Michael, are we going to be able to take some calls tonight from this?
Yeah, I just want to go ahead and make
in?
A quick quick mention, actually, to everybody up in chat. Candy Knox up there, guest 7963, Lisa Renee Brown calling from Port Deposit, Marby in Nashville. I'm Steen calling from Alberta, and Shannon Sibbald calling from the UK. If any one of you have any one story or a few stories you want to go ahead and share with us, the call number is 718-664-9364. That's 718-664-9364. Yeah, Deb, I do believe that. And the thing I find really important about grief is that there's no escaping it. There's no shortcut. There's no Band-Aid. There's no thumbtacks.
Nope.
It does have to happen at your own pace. Nothing seems to make sense. Doing it without medication is you know, definitely recommended. I don't know how I would do it without Mr. Francia, my little juice box, but quite frankly, mother's milk, so to speak, but mommy's special glass. But what you've just explained is absolutely part. Steve's room is still exactly the way it is. I do get points where I think, okay, today's the day. Let's get the box, and I grab the box because it's still full of all the pills and the meds and the bandages and everything and stuff like that. So I go in there, and I put the box down on the bed, and then I sit in his wheelchair, and then I close the door.
I love that.
This can wait till tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you do. And you know what? I know, and I really don't want to make light of this because my heart really is so heavy, and I'm still really kind of still in shock with what's taken place in recent events. And yet, at the same time, I know that going forward, first of all, I hope that they find reason amongst the madness. I know that I found it. But I have to say that one of the ways that I have found has helped. And I know from speaking to other parents, and not just parents who have lost a child, but people that have gone through loss of many different kinds, because loss is loss and it's to be respected, is that humor. Humor has been my buddy, along with Miss Chardonnay. And, you know, you do what you need to do.
Oh, you're familiar with her work, are you?
Yes, I do. I think she's marvelous. Yeah, 7 years better than others. You know, you really do need to do what you need to do. And I found also that when you're truly honest about yourself and what you need to do to overcome it, other people will come to you because they feel you're giving them permission. You give them permission to open up. They feel they're not alone. They don't feel that they're totally going insane and doing things like walking into Dominic's still in your pajamas. But, you know, they realize they're not alone. And that's the important thing, I think, at the end of the day, that we share and that, hey, listen, we know what it's like. You can talk to us, and it helps. At the end of the day, that's what needs to be done. You have to let it out, and you just, oh, my God, you have to let it out.
Yeah, there's no short story to it, but I want to go back to a little bit of music. So this song, this is a brand-new song that Anna Johnson has actually sent me. It's off her brand-new Christmas CD. It's called I Wander As I Wander. I'm sure we're all familiar. So going out to this is Chase Kowalski, age 7, Jesse Lewis, age 6, James Mottoli, age 6, Grace McDonald, age 7, Emily Parker, age 6, Jack Pinto, age 6, Noah Posner, age 6, Carolyn Previti, age 6, And that's about all I can do for this time. So we're going to go to Anna Johnson, I Wander As I Wander. More with Debbie Tibbles on grief when we get back. What did you think? I love when she sends me new stuff, but fantastic little tune.
Mhm. Awesome. Lovely.
Loved
just,
it.
Yeah. Gets to the spot. Absolutely.
Yeah. It really really does hit the spot. Listen, I don't want us to. Well, I was going to say get too far into the conversation without talking about your book and that you are here to talk about something that we can find on Amazon, but we are already about 45 minutes into the conversation, so I think it's a little too late for that. So what do you have
going
on?
No, keep going ahead. I added some time, Vic, where we're fine on time. But, yeah, go ahead and talk about the book. Now re-released on Medallion Press. I'm very proud of you, my love. God knows. I'm sorry, Deb, do you remember the first time I read your book, what the phone message was that I left on your machine?
Oh, don't ask me that. I really don't, actually. Now you put me on the spot.
I remember it very well, and this is how it went, because you were not at home, and I had phoned your answering machine. I got your answering machine. I was still sobbing from being the last part of it. I had run out of all the toilet paper and all the paper towels, so my nose was not only red but absolutely irritated. And I phoned up Debbie, and I said, Debbie Tibbles, your book is a piece of crap. And I hung
up. That's right. That's right, you did. I do remember that. I do remember receiving a message talking about the whole tissue thing. And, you know, I thank you both for being so supportive. And, you know, I think one of the things that I hope that people that are listening will understand about this book is that, it's a journey through a child and going through some suffering and eventually passing. And yet, really, the journey is way, way more than that. And, this journey began not when my son was diagnosed with a brain tumor, but actually the journey truly began after he passed, because that's when the magic began to happen. And I really don't like to kind of spoil the story, except to share that, you know, as we do as parents, I asked my son when he was 4 years old, he was always mad on trains, and I asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up. And he said, I'm going to be a train. And I said, you mean you want to be a train driver, right? Because I just thought he got that all wrong. And he looked at me like I had two heads and, hands on hips, the whole thing, and said to me, no, Mummy, I'm going to be a train. And I will be someday. And I kind of put that to bed, had a good old laugh, forgot all about it. Well, it ended up being quite profound because, you know, 3 years after he said that, my son had gone through 2 years of intense therapy. He passed away. And in that third year, he actually had a train named after him in Chicago. Metra named a train after my son. First time in rail history that they've ever named a train after a child, actually after any human being. Most trains, if you're a train buff, they always name them after towns or cities. So it's the first time in history that's actually ever happened. And this is the story of how he became a train, those kind of synchronistic, magical, celestial moments that occur, a synchronistical kind of moments. That's probably not even grammatical. But anyway, just how that came to be. And I truly don't like to go into it in too much detail, because I really like for the reader to read the book and they find their own journey within the story. And that's kind of what it's about. It's everyone's journey on some level. And it's just a truly magical experience. And the reader is left feeling very inspired and hopeful, and has truly changed their lives. And for me as a mother, unbelievable. It heals me every day as a mother, and I feel truly blessed to have the witness of these testimonies from people who have read the book and email me. Complete strangers from across the world have contacted me and told me how much Ollie and this train and his story has touched their lives. So I hope that in some way this gift of the book for somebody for Christmas will hope to do that in someone else's life. I really do.
I think it will. I mean, I definitely think it will. And for those of you have not had the opportunity to listen to the full story, again, Debbie was on At Home with Victoria about a year, maybe a year and a half ago. And actually, Debbie, as I recall, you made me cry. You made me cry on that show. Now that my brain is starting to work again, I think about it. You had me crying. I think I had to take a couple of seconds, and Michael had to take over. So, but it is, guys, one of those stories that there are many, many lessons in the story. And then when you actually get to the part where you see the train and you see his name, it's just, it just tears you up on the inside. But there's so much good that actually comes out of that story. And, Debbie, I was thinking about something when we were talking about sort of the whole grieving process, and I've been hearing this theme sort of repeated over and over and over again by many people on different newscasts, on television, and even in written print as well, how we as humans still have to have the instinct to survive. You know, for a lot of us, there is going to be a tomorrow. And you talked about that. You had to go to the grocery store. You had to put milk on the table. So there are these things that we have to do to help us get through through the next day. And I guess sort of when you really sit down and think about it, I mean, just as much as grief and losing someone is a part of life, you know, survival is also a part of it, because in a way it kind of nudges itself and sort of kicks in, you know, even if you're perhaps not really even thinking about it.
Right. You were talking earlier about how there's like specific stages that they talk about grief and what have you, and you know, the survival instinct does kick in, and I think the important thing for me anyway, and I can't vouch for anybody else, although I've heard this, other people say the same thing, is that it comes down to when you're ready to do it, because there's a process of giving up that you kind of go through too, where, I mean, I know that I fell into this black hole and I did not want to get out of it at all. And funnily enough, it was my son who kind of reached in and saved me. But there has to be a moment or something, as you say, that nudges you into that instinctive survival mode. And I do wonder, you know, like right now, my heart and my mind is still in turmoil with these recent events and these parents that are going through this unbelievable situation of loss that I just can't fathom. I mean, I just can't, and I'm not sure how they're going to get out of that, or, you know, I know that eventually at some point there's going to be that light that will guide them, wherever that will come from. I'm not even going to attempt to say, because I don't feel it's my place. I know that it will happen eventually, but again, it has to be when you are ready, and that will just take you to that place that you are able to then put your foot forward instead of feeling that you're stuck, you know. You know, that's the thing, and it's one step at a time, it's one day at a time, it's one week at a time, it's one month at a time, it's one year at a time, and you know, there are amazing lessons to be learned from everybody about loss and how we cope. And I think one of the fundamental things we have to remember is that, you know, we were put on this earth to help each other and to stay together.
Bingo.
We're all connected.
Yeah.
You know, whether we realize it or not.
And you know, before I forget, Michael, you can take it after this. Shannon Sybil, who's one of our wonderful fans who listens from the United Kingdom, she is, I think she's still inside the chat room, but, you know, she's grieving a lot tonight because she, I think it was 7 months ago that she lost her grandfather, and I happened to log on to Facebook today, and she had a picture of her grandfather and with her when she was a kid, and I remember my first instinct was when I looked at the picture, I thought, man, Shannon's dad looks just like him, like they literally could be twins. And I just got this this big smile on my face, and then I thought about Abby when I was at a store, and it was something that reminded me of her, and I started laughing. So it was kind of like I knew that when I started to smile and show my big teeth and laugh, that I was slowly, you know, just maybe a little inch here or there was starting to turn the corner. When it went from tears into laughter, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually, everybody up in chat is going through their own personal loss this year and years back. My sister's actually up in the chat room as well, so we're all doing that. Debbie, I want to piggyback off what you just said about the necessity to essentially give up, which, pardon me one second, pardon me, what I find it to be is more of a surrender. It's when you actually surrender to the point where you get out of your own way, you're able to go ahead and witness things for what they are. You're not actually having them colored by predisposed understanding or beliefs and stuff like that. It's,
yes.
It's there is no right way to grieve. There's no wrong way to grieve. But I do
mm-hmm.
find the surrender to be absolutely poignant, because until
yes.
you do that, you cannot even
mm-hmm.
see straight. Wouldn't you agree, Deb?
Yes. I totally agree, and that's a great way to put it, because it's like you are surrendering to yourself and to the process. And I love how you say, you know, you need to get out of the way. We absolutely
yeah.
do. We have to get out of the way of ourselves and allow everything to just be and surrender. That's the most perfect description, because that it really is what you do. You surrender to it, and
mm-hmm.
if you fight it, it will drag you down, and so you just have to go through it. But oh my gosh, it's just, you know, and you can surrender to it any time of the day or week, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I've learned over the years, I actually call it my cleansing process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my partner Jen now kind of, you know, anybody that lives with me knows my quotes. Cleansing, and they know when it's coming. I can usually, I now see it, and I can say, "Hey ho, I'm gonna need this
yeah.
tonight."
And,
yes,
yeah.
and
yeah.
And sometimes I like to be with people, and sometimes I have to be alone. The most wonderful thing about it is the recognition of it, the absolute surrender to it, and because I've also learned that when I get done, I feel better, and
you
then
feel better,
I'm able.
Yeah.
yeah, I feel better, and I can move forward, and I'm
yeah.
honoring. We must never forget that no matter how much time has passed, whether it's, you know, 8 days, 8 weeks, 8 years, 80 years, we must never forget, and we must always honor those that we love. And I think that in our surrendering and our cleansing and our embracing of our grief is the most wonderful thing that we can do for our loved ones.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
I agree fully. I want to go ahead and take this one really quickly, Vic, because
okay.
grief was fantastic, because I've been around it for – Steve was sick for 9 years. So when Steve was first diagnosed, it was a year until he was working full-time in a full-time wheelchair. So his progression was really quickly. And, of course, you go for counseling. People offer counseling. The MS Society is a great organization for counseling, especially those with MS, because Steve and I really had to mourn the loss of his life as he saw it, too, from the healthy
yeah.
virile, you know, 5% body fat, to having to come to terms with the fact that, you know what, the good thing is you'll never have to take another aerobics class. The good thing is you'll never
right.
have to dance again. You hated dancing in the first place. But with him, we put into play this that worked actually quite well, because – with cancer, with MS, with any other disease, you have to make a place for it in your home. So basically with Steve, I suggested you can choose to grieve 1 hour a day. I will back off. You grieve, you get mad, you throw shit, absolutely go ahead. Or you can do 1 day a week where you can pick that 1 day and just be a total nutbag, total lose it. Or you can
mm-hmm.
pick a week a month. These are your three options. But I can't be unhappy every day. We're not going to be unhappy every day. We still have
mm-hmm.
to continue to go on. And it's I think, having that, because even Steve didn't lose his faculties until the very end. So he was cognizant enough to realize that you have to roll with the punches. And for those who have ever met Steve up in chat, you knew he was as funny as you could ever want it
oh,
to be.
Oh, my goodness, hilarious.
So, yeah, just absolutely.
Yeah.
Funny.
Just yeah, so that's my
hilarious.
Two bits.
And guys, you know, it's interesting because as we're having the conversation, of course, we also have a live chat going on inside the chat room. And it's interesting that I'm sitting here reading a lot of the chats because, for example, Lisa was talking about, and Lisa, I remember when your aunt passed away, because I remember you posting something about it on Facebook, but Lisa was talking about when her aunt passed away, and Mar just had a recent passing, and I'll, if she wants to tell everybody about that, I kind of did publicly, but Mar, you know my heart is in the right place. But it's just interesting in terms of how people grieve differently and how people feel differently about things, because some of the folks in the chat room say they just kind of want to be by themselves. And some people
right.
say, well, I want to talk about it to everybody. And some people say, well, I only want to talk about it to a few people. So it is, you know, totally amazing that all of it is different. But at this time, what I wanted to do, Michael was so gracious and very strong, I might add, to recite the names of the kids. Michael, do you have some more kids and I can go on and read the adults, or did you get them all?
Yeah, let's do this. I'm going to read the kids, you read the adults. We're going to go back to a song, then we're going to wrap the show up as Debbie. So this is the song, Timothy Craig, one of my favorites, One Small Miracle. It's very poignant. I'll finish up with the kids. Janice Rakos, age 6. AVL Richmond, age 6. Benjamin Wheeler, age 6. Allison N. Wyatt, age 6. Victoria, go for the adults.
And these were the adults. Dawn Hawkspring, she was the principal, 47 years old. Rachel DeVino, 29. Anna Marie Murphy, 52. Lauren, I'm going to try to guess and get this right. Michael, you probably can help me with this. Michael is really good with names. How would you
Rousseau.
Say Lauren's last?
Rousseau. Lauren Rousseau.
30 years old. Mary Sherlock, 56
yeah.
years old. And Victoria Soto, 27 years old, and those were the adults who passed away. And also our hearts go out to, there were two other adults, I'm told that they have been released from the hospital today, and they are actually at home, so I was very happy to hear that. Go ahead, Michael.
Absolutely. This is Timothy Craig with One Small Miracle. When we get back, your closing thoughts for Debbie. Please feel free to go ahead and call in once again to 718-664-9364. I realize it's a hard topic, but once again, that number is 718-664-9364. This is Timothy Craig with One Small Miracle. More with Debbie when we get back.
It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. Cause I don't know which way to turn or what more I can do. I must have tried everything, but does it mean anything? I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. I might have lost my way, or was I just left behind? Somebody send me a signal, somebody give me a sign. I'm reaching out with both hands, I feel like I'm running out of time. It's getting dark where I am, and I can't find the light. I must have tried everything, but does it mean anything? I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle just to get me through. Just to get me through. I'm running out of answers. What am I supposed to do? Ain't there anybody up there? Can't you hear my voice? Can't you feel my pain? Somebody send me an angel. Somebody send me an angel. Tried everything, but doesn't mean anything. I must have prayed a million times for my sun to shine. There's gotta be a star in the sky for me to save me from this misery. It's gonna take one small miracle get me through. Cause I don't know which way to turn, what more I can do.
Dedicated to all those families affected by the horrendous shootings in Connecticut.
Connecticut,
yes. Timothy Craig with One Small Miracle. Boy, you know what? I'm telling you, I'm proud of us for this reason. We have gone now, you know, an hour and 5 minutes. We've never mentioned the shooter's name once. And you know what? I'm proud of us.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs to have any recognition. I think he did what he is actually suiting through. Apparently, he had a history of mental illness, which can only be the thing, the deciding factor to make any sense of this horrible tragedy. So, Victoria, aren't you proud of us that we didn't mention the guy's name? I heard it so many times, I thought, no, not on this show. Go ahead, Vic.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And, you know, your comment just made me think about Anderson Cooper. I was watching him do some live reports, and he had talked about how they only mentioned his name one time, and that was at the top of his show, and that they were not going to dedicate any more time to mentioning his name. But I think it's remarkable, and I think it's wonderful that we have not mentioned his name at all. So I'm really, really, really happy about that. And, Debbie, you know, literally from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank you so much because, well, Michael talked about grieving and loss even before the massacre at Connecticut, at the Connecticut school happened. I thought, yeah, you know, we can do this. And I just thought that I wasn't going to be able to do it because of Abby passing, and it was so soon. But, of course, when the Connecticut shooting happened, it was kind of like Michael said, all of a sudden, and I think people do this all the time, all of a sudden, it wasn't that I forgot about Abby, she was still there, but I thought about the families and how they were going to have to identify their kids and that they no longer had those kids. And I thought, well, you know, my problem is quite small compared to what's going on in Connecticut. So it is amazing how we also kind of, you know, forget whether it's misery or problems going on in our own life. We're able to kind of put it on pause or put it on a shelf somewhere in the back of our head, although it's still there, to grieve for other people.
Yes. I think, you know, what this is you know, we acknowledge that this is this awful tragedy that is just horrendous, horrific act that we just can't comprehend. And I think that the fact, first of all, proud of you for deciding to go ahead with the show, you know, being so close to the loss of Abby. And I think that all of us together, again, it just proves to me that when we share, we all heal a little bit more. And that's what it's all about, you know, at the end of the day. Because, you know, as we go forward in, you know, in this holiday period, I guarantee you that every day that you know, going about your daily lives, you're going to meet somebody who's going through loss of some kind. And I think the important thing is that if we can just recognize that and give a hug to someone, just a smile, take time out to speak to that person, who knows what could have happened? I don't know. But I just think that I think it's great we came together. I'm proud we didn't mention that either. And I thank you for having me on the show. Always a joy. I appreciate it very much, and I wish you both much love and all the best for a wonderful holiday. Thank you so much.
You too, Debbie. Before you go, go ahead and remind us exactly where you're on. You're on Facebook.com/Debbie Tibbles, DEBITIBBLEZ, and where else are you
yes.
at besides Amazon.com?
Yes, that's it. Amazon.com if you want to go check out the book. And yeah, I have a website too, www.debbietibbles.com. Please connect with me on Facebook. I'm here if you need to share. Happy to do that. That's what we came here to do.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so
Deb,
much.
Always a pleasure, honey. I'll call you on Christmas Day with you and Jen, okay?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to badger you if you don't call me. You know that, right?
Well, be tanked and on your back when I call.
Oh, I will. No doubt, honey.
Huge love, doll.
Take care. All right, take care. Love
Bye.
You both.
And again, that
it.
Was the wonderful Debbie Tibbles. And you know, Michael, that's one thing that I love so much about our show. It doesn't matter what topic. I mean, we've done over actually 230 shows so far. So it really doesn't matter what topic, you know, what topic that we are discussing. It's great to be able to have someone like Debbie, that we have this you know, vast wealth of resources of people that have been on At Home with Victoria that we do consider family, that come back from time to time and give us updates on what's going on in their lives, that we can literally send an email and pick up the phone and say, hey, we've got this show. Do you mind coming on? And it's always, you know, I would love to come on and talk about it. I love that about our guest. That's just wonderful.
Absolutely. And I'm thrilled to actually call her friend, because she is a piece of work. I enjoy her so much. Again, reading her book, Ollie Tibbles, The Boy Became a Train, really was amazing to me, the way she put it in her own brand of humor. Again, respecting everybody for the grieving process, reminding everybody that humor is definitely a coping mechanism. It's a Band-Aid. It's a thumbtack. It's what will help you get through. So, Vic, I'm very proud of us, too. We didn't make it through a blubbering mess. You know, I kind of cracked up a couple times, but
I must confess, you know, I believe in telling the truth. I actually cracked when you played, what was it, the second song, I think. But of course, our microphones were muted, so no one heard me. So
yeah.
By that time, I kind of got myself together. But I've got to say this for the last time, and then we really do have to go. It was so refreshing to see so many of my fellow journalists that I don't even know on television, that they were able to express their emotions, because I think what Debbie said, that shows viewers and people that, you know, we are human, we do have emotions. So, I mean, you know, it's very sad under the circumstances that this happened, but, you know, I was happy to see that journalists were doing that. They felt comfortable with doing that, but more importantly, response that I saw through social media and also through different blog sites, it was welcome. People
yeah.
actually, they didn't like it, of course. You know what? I don't know what word I'm trying to use, but
I understand
but
exactly
people actually
saying, yeah.
felt it, I guess, refreshing to see that side of journalists is what I want to say.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have to understand that the human condition is something that we're so gravely lacking right now. Seeing President Obama on Sunday in Newton was stunning to me, to the point where I couldn't watch the end of it. I'm so absolutely restored in the faith of people right now, because this is tragic up in Connecticut, and it shouldn't happen to children. I mean, for God's sake, leave the kids alone. I mean,
yeah, no, I totally
so,
agree. And one thing that I had mentioned at the top of the hour when we started the show was that I wanted to make it clear tonight was not the time to debate gun control policies and different projects and all of those sort of things that people are going to be talking about in the next couple of days. Tonight was really about talking about grieving. It was, you know, to honor the children, to honor the adults, and to let the people in the entire state and Newtown of Connecticut, law enforcement officials, know that we are, you know, At Home with Victoria. We're there with you. We're thinking about you. And just like many, many, many millions of people, you know, in the world right now that's mourning that, it just really hit home to so many people. But changing the subject a little bit, we've got our annual Christmas show that's coming up this week. Can you talk a little bit about that? Play us a song.
Absolutely.
We're back.
Thursday the 20th at 8 p.m. We're going to be right here on Blog Talk Radio. at Home with Victoria presents their annual Christmas specials. Lisa Renee Brown will be with us talking about Angels for Soldiers. I've got special guest artists lined up with brand new music you haven't heard from, and some of the oldies that are coming to us from last. Yes, some brand people that are just I'm so thrilled. I would like to leak the names, but I want to keep you in suspense. I will say Miss Shelley Wren may make a special appearance. I may say that Anna Johnson may. I may say that Preston Leatherman may. I may say that Joshua Stedman, SJ Acoustic may. I'm just hinting. I don't know. Nothing's in solid, but definitely it's going to be a fantastic show supporting those soldiers and those deployed. So I want to thank up everybody in the chat room tonight. Candy Knox from down the road, Lisa Renee Brown from Port Deposit, Marby in Nashville, brilliant producing in another chat room, Shannon Sobel for the UK. Thanks for staying up so late, and much love to you and your granddad. So Vic, I'm proud of us. We didn't ball once. So I got one more song as
we
go out.
Well, we sort of did. It was just while the music was playing.
But no one knew.
Yeah, and no one could hear.
We were muted. We were safe.
Yeah, I could actually hear the microphone. So, guys, Michael's going to pick another. And, Michael, by the way, before I let you go, fabulous selections on all of the music tonight. It was all appropriate.
Thank you.
You always do such a wonderful job, and that's all everyone's been talking about in the chat room, your selection on the music. It was just wonderful. So you've got one more song for us, and
we'll check back in with everybody on
Thursday.
Absolutely. Thursday night, don't forget to go ahead and tune in. This is Anna Johnson with What Child Is This? Thank you, everybody, and have a great night. See you on Thursday.
Child, is it too late to rest?
been listening to At Home with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.